Well, we're chapter 2. Well, as we said at the beginning of the semester, the book is just bass backwards as far as I'm concerned. They want you to understand how to buy and sell securities before you even know what the hell they are. And I think that's wrong. So what we're going to do is we're going to focus on margin accounts and selling short. Stuff they try to teach you at the beginning of the semester, which I think is completely bogus. But first we'll take a look at brokerage firms, because you got to put your money somewhere, right? Well, not actually. You don't have to deal with a brokerage firm. We talked about dividend reinvestment plans. But there are three major types of brokerage firms. And before 1975, I think it was, there was only one, the full-service traditional brokerage firm. Merrill Stench, Morgan Stupid. Have you heard of these two?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's others. I'm sorry, what's it called?
Merrill
Lynch, right, Merrill Lynch. And they're now owned by?
Steve Bullish of America.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Are they still doing that?
I don't think so.
Who are they owned by now? Do you know?
No.
Bank of Armenia. Bank of America. Sorry, Bank of America. That Merrill Lynch is now owned by Bank of America.
Wait.
What?
Why do you say it that way?
Because I love America too much to know that it's associated with a bank called Bank of America. It's not, you know, American Airlines. All right, American Funds. Yes, but Bank of America. Change your damn name. Bank of America used to be based in San Francisco, L.A. area, and then Nations Bank from Charlotte, North Carolina, bought them. And mostly because they wanted that name. They wanted Bank of America. And they wanted the branches. Very expensive. And I have seen them do just horrible things. But you go golfing with these people. You go drinking with these people. And they don't want to touch you unless you have $50,000 or $100,000 to invest. I heard one person just say that this guy would only deal with clients that had at least $500,000 to invest. And now he was raising it to $250,000.
Not bad economy.
That's where, if you're a broker, you make the most money off of very wealthy people. The discount brokers started in 1975, and then there's still many around. They're sometimes called the mom and pop shops. But the big discount brokers have been reduced to basically one, Schwab, which is not a bad company, folks. I mean, they have their picadillos like everybody else. But I admire Schwab, and we'll tell you in a bit. And then the deep discount brokerage firms, the E-Trades, the Snottrades, the Ameritrashes, and all the others. They have emphasized technology. Not that the others don't use it, but you don't even talk to a broker. You just do everything online. And what can you expect to pay for each? What kind of service can you expect? Well, figure it out. Right? If you go to a full-service broker, you're going to spend $70 to $100 or more per trade. And they want you to have at least, $7,000 to $8,000 for a trade. They don't want, $500 trades or $1,000 trades. Discount brokers used to charge $45 when they started, then $29, then $19, and $13, and now I think I saw that Schwab is charging now $9 per trade. I think that's what I saw. Maybe it was $9.95. I don't know. I got to go back and look. And the deep discount brokers, $5, $7 is a Scottrade, $10 is E-Trade, right? Or $9.95 or something like that. And then the mutual fund companies have gotten into the act. Fidelity and Vanguard now. And I think, I'm not sure, but I know Fidelity, they'll make a buck any way they can. But Vanguard, I think the reason they did this is because they want people to take their ETFs seriously. And we talked about exchange-traded funds. The problem with exchange-traded funds is that you pay brokerage commissions. So if you're putting $50 a month away in a mutual fund, do you want to buy an ETF? If you're going to pay $7 a trade, that's a pretty big commission, or $10 a trade. So both Fidelity and Vanguard now offer free commissions on their own funds, and I think it's to get people to buy their ETFs. And then a couple of companies experimented with $0 commissions. One failed, but the other one has given up. Have you heard of Zecco? Zecco.com? They now charge $5 a trade, so I guess that experiment didn't work out too well. Wait a minute. How can a brokerage firm make any money with a $0 commission? In fact, how can a company make any money with a $5 or $7 per trade? Do you remember this slide from Chapter 5? Thus, company, in this case Scottrade. And in Scottrade's defense, at least they put this on every single email confirmation they send you. Or at least they did. I don't know if they still do. But notice they put it all in uppercase. And when you want people to read something, when you want people not to read something, put it all in uppercase. Because it makes it look like it's really important, but people don't read it. Because it's harder to read uppercase in a paragraph. You need to save uppercase for titles and labels, but not for this, because it's harder to read. Scottrade receives remuneration. What's that mean? Money, yeah. For directing orders to particular broker-dealers or market centers for execution. Such remuneration is considered compensation to the firm, and the source and amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request.
So will you take their test, they'll let you
know? No, you have to ask them if they got a cut. And so, Schwab, as far as I can figure out, because I've asked them and I looked in their broker agreement, because they hide it in the broker-client agreement, which you all read, right? Click here to say that you read that. I read through the whole damn thing, and so Schwab does not do this. Now, we don't do this. The company I work for, we're a discount broker. But then again, we don't charge $10 a trade. We're more expensive. And if you go call Schwab, if you call a broker, or you call Scottrade or TD Ameritrade and ask for a broker's help, they're going to tack on $28 or $30. So it's, you're getting, you're costing them money. So you understand how the internet brokers get you? How the cheap brokers get you? That doesn't mean it's not cheap, folks. $7 a trade, and so they add, maybe $5 or something like that, so you pay $12 instead of $5. But you don't see it. That's the part that gets me angry. And now there are more alternative methods of paying for your brokerage. As the competition for your business has gotten fiercer, the methods of charging investors for investment services have gotten more, shall we say, creative. Merrill Lynch experimented with charging $3,000 per year for unlimited trades. Basically, we're going to charge you $3,000 a year, and you can trade all you want, but that's gone now. And there are many other methods. The new modern-day agogo way to soak customers, charge for brokerage services, is called wealth management. Do you remember wealth management for mutual funds? It's also called a wrap account, a financial advisor account. Instead of charging per transaction, the brokerage firm tacks on a yearly 1 or 2% wealth management fee. We're not your brokers. Oh, no. We don't want you to buy and sell. We just want to screw you every year. We want to charge you every year, and we'll send you a bottle of wine on your birthday. And that's what I'm talking to this guy. He said, well, I'll make sure I send him a bottle of wine on their birthday and on Christmas. And then what else do you do? Well, we have a yearly annual meeting, and we sit down and talk about their portfolio. Do you trade a lot? Oh, no, I don't trade a lot. Good. I'm glad they don't trade a lot, but you realize how much you're going to make off of your clients if you're going to charge them 1% or 2% in perpetuity. That's on top of any other fees from the mutual fund companies if they're in mutual funds. And if they're not in mutual funds, if you're buying and selling stocks, well, maybe it's a good deal if you're the kind of person who buys and sells often. Because then, you buy and sell every time you're going to get commission. In this case, you don't pay the commission, but you pay that wealth management fee. These type of programs, remember the Fund F, the Class F, the Class I shares and mutual funds? Same idea. These type of programs are being pushed by all the major full-service brokers firms, and there are many flavors. And this is my favorite one. And this was real popular right before the crash of 2008, and I just went back to the website and saw, they're not doing it anymore. Let's see a minute. The latest wrinkle that started back in 2005 or so is the new performance-based wealth management. We want you to know that we are on your side. We want you to make money. When you make money, we make money. Performance-based wealth management. Only pay your advisor when you make money. See, when your account goes up, the advisor receives 10 to 20% of your earnings when you make money. So you make 10%, we'll take 1% of that, or 2%. So you really may make 8 or 9. The advisor receives nothing when you lose money or do not make anything. Now, you understand? If you lose money, we don't charge you. So your account goes up to a certain amount. If it goes down, until it goes back up to where it was, you will not be charged. Doesn't that sound tempting?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? They stopped doing it. Right? Because nobody, or not maybe some people, but very few people have gotten back up to where they were in 2007. So these people haven't been paid for 5 years almost. It's a variation of the way hedge funds charge their shareholders. It's mostly marketed to current high net worth investors. In fact, I went to a seminar and these guys said, well, we want people who can write a check for $1 million. Well, don't we all? When you're a broker, when you want to be? Although it sounds tempting, folks, the reality is that you have the potential to pay far, far more for your investment services. And so, disclaimer, none of my clients do this. I would try to talk them out of it if they wanted to do it. I went back to their website, as I said, and now they have a minimum fee. A minimum fee, even because a lot of their clients are still not back to where they were in 2007. And then, can you get around the brokerage firms? Do you actually have to deal with a brokerage firm? No. As we saw in Chapter 5, you can get what's called a dividend reinvestment plan. And virtually all the large cap companies have these things. You go on their website, check out the link for investors, and they don't do it. I mean, they hire somebody to do it for them. But if you go back to Chapter 5 and look at the Sempra dividend reinvestment plan, it was pennies they would charge us. Not every quarter. Every quarter we would get a statement, and then every once in a while there would be a 9-cent charge or a 7-cent charge. That shows you how cheap it is to actually administer these programs. The problem with these things is if you have 18 different companies, you're going to get 18 different statements. Well, most of it's all online. So there are companies, and we talked about the NAIC folks, the National Association of Investors Corp at Better Investing. They used to have a program that charged $10 a month, and now they use another company called Folio FN, and I really should do more research because I used to tell people to check it out because I thought it was a pretty good program, and I don't know what Folio FN is. But if they're using it, I can tell you, at least go look at it. I can't really recommend it. But you understand what's going on here? You don't have a broker. You say, I want to buy Johnson & Johnson, and they set it up so you could pay them $50 a month, and the dividends are automatically invested, and you get charged hardly anything. And the problem is, you got all these different statements going on. The question?
Is this sort of swap or do this?
No. You go right to the company.
Oh, the website. Okay.
Go to Coca-Cola's website, look for the link that says investors, and they'll talk about their dividend reinvestment plan. And mostly all the large cap companies have these, lots of mid cap. I don't know about small caps. Most brokerage firms will do this now, but they want to charge you, their commissions. Okay, so any questions on brokerage firms? Any questions on brokerage firms? Who do you think you're going to go with? Anybody? Boat Drips? Who? You don't know? Anybody?
Vanguard?
Got to make money first. $50 a month, folks. How much is your cell phone payment?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, my God. You don't even want to know. I know. It's amazing. It's like air. They have to have it. It doesn't matter how much they're charging you. You have to have your cell phone. Okay. Cash accounts. Now, here's yet another example of instruction about syphilis is not an instruction to get syphilis. We're going to teach you margining today. And we've danced around this topic. We've talked about it. But now let's get down to the nitty-gritty. I am not going to ask you to do any of the calculations on the final. The calculations are on the back of the handout I just gave you. They are some of the trickiest calculations that are on the Series 7 that you have to understand if you take the stockbroker exam. Most people are going to start off with what is called a cash account. A cash account is a brokerage account in which all transactions are made on a strictly cash basis. You simply give the brokerage firm your money and you make buy and sell orders inside the account, depending on how much cash you got. They're the simplest arrangement. The broker is not going to do any credit check because you're not borrowing anything from them. You're giving them the cash. Once you've established a good relationship, most brokerage firms will allow you to purchase shares of stock even if you don't have enough cash in the account. Huh? That doesn't make any sense, does it? Well, yes, it does. Remember that stock transactions settle in how many days? Did you get that wrong on the exam? Chapter 5. How many days do stock transactions settle in?
Three.
Mutual funds and bonds, one day. stock transactions settle in 3 days. So if you say, I want to buy 100 shares of Coca-Cola, and you don't have enough cash in your account, usually your brokerage firm will say, no problem, just we'll buy it today, but get the money in within 3 days. Because you ain't going to get the shares for 3 days anyway. Are you with me? Now, I know Scottrade won't do this, and probably some of the other internet brokers probably won't do this. If you tried to buy the shares today, even though you won't get them, it's today, you're not going to get them until Monday. Right? One, two, three, right? No. Tuesday. Friday, Monday, Thursday, right? Tuesday. Friday, Monday, Tuesday. See, you won't get the shares until Tuesday. Scottrade would say, nope, can't do it. Come bring the cash in, no problem. And we'll let you do it. So, there you go. Now, margin account. Margin account is a whole other world, folks. When you open up a margin account, the brokerage firm is going to do a credit check. Just as if you bought a credit, got a credit card, or bought a car with a car loan, they're going to go and look at your credit rating. Why? Because you're going to be borrowing money from the brokerage account. A margin account is a brokerage account in which, subject to certain limitations, securities can be bought and sold on credit. If you open up a margin account, the brokerage firm will do a credit check to determine your credit worthiness, since you're going to be borrowing money from them. The interest rate you pay on money borrowed from your broker is called the margin rate. And this drives me nuts, the way they use the term margin. I don't like the way they use the term margin, but I didn't make the rules, and no. It is actually, the margin rate is actually a pretty good rate. It's a whole lot better than your credit cards. It's often the prime rate plus 1 or 2 percentage points. So right now the prime is what, 3 or 4? So it's like 6 or 7%. Which is not bad, folks. What's your credit card charging you? 18, 19, right? But it's not as good usually as home loans. Home loan is out 4, 4.5. Or 2 or 3 above the current market rates, depending on how much you borrow. Buying on margin is the ability to use borrowed funds to purchase securities. So this can be a wonderful thing. It can magnify your returns by reducing the amount of equity that the investor must come up with. So you get to borrow money to buy stocks. And the margin is how much you have come up with. Now, shouldn't it be the other way around? Right? To me, the margin should be the part that you borrow, not the part that you came up with. At least, because margin sort of means on the margin, right? But no, that's not the way it is. Margin is how much money you came up with. So let's say you came up with 75% and you borrowed 25%. Your margin would be 75%. Buying on margin, there's that word again, leveraged account. You're borrowing to buy investments. Buying on margin allows the investor to use financial leverage, the use of debt financing to magnify investment returns. Buying on margin also allows an investor to tap into the equity into their account. This is one of the actually not bad reasons to use margin. Without actually selling their investments and generating commissions and taxable transactions. So think about it, folks. You may know somebody who may have a home. And after you have equity in the home, the house is appreciated, you've paid down the loan, you can get a home equity line of credit. It's called a HELOC or a HELOC. It's a loan based on your home. And so you can think of the stocks like your home, an equity, an asset. And so once you've built up a huge portfolio, you want to get some of the cash out, right? Well, if you sell, you got to pay the commissions. And you have to pay the taxes. But if you borrow from your securities, you borrow from your stocks, assuming you don't need the money soon, assuming it's not you're going to replace the money soon, I mean, what's soon, 6 months or so like that, you can borrow from your account. Now, that's not a bad thing for margining, at least in my humble opinion. But trying to magnify your investment returns can be very dangerous because It's like a two-edged sword. It works great when stocks go up, or whatever it is you're buying. and it works horrible when they go down. Buying on margin is much like buying a house. When you purchase a home, do you come up with the total amount? No, you come up with a 10% or 20% down payment. Stocks require a 50% down payment. You can't borrow 80% of the price. You can borrow 50% or less. The margin requirement, here it is, margin requirement. This is also called the initial margin. The margin requirement. Yes, I'm going to ask you these things on the exam, but not in detail, but you really should. I'm not going to ask any calculations. They're also called the initial margin. This is the minimum amount that must be in the margin investor's own funds. The minimum amount you have to come up with. And believe it or not, this is set by the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, why would the Federal Reserve Bank get involved? Well, think about it. When you, as an entity, start lending money to people, what do you look like? You start to look like a bank. And in this case, the brokerage firms are acting like banks. They're lending money out to people. Do you understand? But instead of lending money out to buy shoes or cars or houses, they're lending money out to, for people to buy stocks or bonds. Are you with me? Understand? So the Federal Reserve Bank says, ah, we are the in control of the banking system here in the United States. We're going to tell you, brokerage firms, how much you can borrow and how much equity the customers have to keep in their account. And it's been set at 50% for decades. It's been set at 50% at decades. So this allows you to purchase the same amount of stock with less money. And the margin loan, or the debit balance, it's also called, the margin loan is how much you have borrowed. Right? The margin is how much you owe, not how much you own. The margin loan is how much you owe. So let's take a look at an example. You are looking at a $20 stock. Now, if it were a cash account, how much would you have to come up with? This is a tough question, folks. If it was a cash account, how much do you have to come up with a $20 stock? $20. But if it's a margin account, you can get away with coming up with just $10. Your margin is $10. 50% is the initial margin. And then the margin loan, the debit balance, is $10. Now, what happens if the price rises to $30? What happens? Yeah, you've gained $10, right? But if you bought it cash, you had to come up with $20. So your gain was 10, and your capital, as it's often called, or the amount you've invested, is $20. How much of a percentage increase is that? Everyone should say 50%. See, I don't ask you to do questions like this, and I should. The book asks you to do it in the beginning of the semester, and that's one of the things I really should do. But anyway, so 50% return, right? But wait a minute. If you borrowed half, you made $10 on how much? You only came up with $10 of invested capital, if we want to sound smart. $10 of your own money. And your gain was $10. So what was that return? You see what happened? It's like a lever. That's why we use the term leverage. A leveraged account. We've magnified our gains. you know what's next, right? You know what's next? Right, we're going to magnify our losses. The buying on margin example, revisit it. You put up $10 and borrow $10. You purchase one share of common stock for $20, but this time, where's my brown crayon? What happens to the price? It goes down 10%. Let's try to make those equal, piano. What happened? If we had bought the stock in a cash account, we lost 50%. But since we borrowed 50%, how much did we lose? 100%. We lost all our money. You understand? Because we still owe the brokerage firm $10. So now we sell our stock. That $10 goes to the brokerage firm, not to us. We lost our $10. And you see, this is what happened in the real estate world, folks. In 10 times over. Only half of the money was yours. You borrowed the rest. You have lost your entire investment. Buying on margin magnifies your gains and magnifies your losses. Margin buying was one of the major contributing factors to the crash of 1929. At the time, it was a new era. The financial world, the modern, thoroughly modern millie, the 1920s, flappers, skirts, women could smoke in public. Margin buying, well, at the time, the margin requirement was only 10%. Well, I mean, think about it. You only come up with 10% for a home, and stocks are like homes. They're assets, and they're only going to go up, so you only have to come up with 10%. So that means if the stock goes from $20 down to $18, you're wiped out. Are you with me?
Yes.
Yeah. For this reason, this scenario here is prohibited. You can't lose 100%. They won't let you. You would have what's called a margin call. And we'll discuss that in just a few moments. But you're with me? In other words, they ain't going to let this happen in the world of stocks. They're going to close out your position. They're going to say, you're losing too much money. And you signed this in the when you clicked here. You said it's okay for them to make sure that I don't lose too much money. Because what happens if you lose more than 10%? I mean, lose more than $10. Now it's their carcasses, right? Now you could just run away and they're stuck with the bill. Because you've already lost all yours. Now you're losing their money. They're not going to let that happen. Because margin trading is inherently more risky, margin accounts are more highly scrutinized by brokerage firms. If you have an account where your margin is less than the margin requirement, you are now restricted. You have a restricted account. A restricted account is a margin account whose equity is less than the initial margin requirement. In other words, you've lost some money. The investor may not make further margin purchases and must bring the margin back to the initial margin requirement when the securities are sold. So you're restricted. No more of this. You either sell these things now or come up with more cash. Information technology has made the computer firm's job, brokerage firm's job of scrutinizing margin clients much easier. Now the computer just spits out a list. Says, hey, these people are in trouble. Go call them or get them on the horn. The maintenance margin. Where is that book? The maintenance margin is the absolute minimum that you are allowed to have. Maintenance margin. Make sure I spell it right. And the Federal Reserve Bank says it cannot be less than 25%. But the firm is allowed to set it higher. They could say, oh, you know, Victor, we want to set it to 30% for you. Or Maria, we want to set it to 40% for you. They're allowed to do that. But the Federal Reserve Bank says it cannot be any less than 25%. And what happens if you go below the maintenance margin? You get the dreaded margin call. This is a notification of the need to bring the equity of an account whose margin is below the maintenance margin up to the initial margin level, or to have enough margin holdings sold to reach this standard. In other words, you've lost too much money, get out now. Either come up with more cash, which, what do you think of that strategy? In fact, there's a saying in the industry, never meet a margin call. Because you've already lost, now you're just going to put more money in, you're going to lose more money. If the investor does not meet the margin call in sufficient time, and this is typically 72 hours, the brokerage firm is authorized to sell enough of the securities to meet the margin call. You signed an agreement that said that would be okay. Are you with me? You understand? And so you're going to get a telephone call. Well, nowadays, what are you going to get? An email. And during the tech crash in 2000 to 2002, some of these companies were not waiting 72 hours. TD, it used to be called TD Waterhouse, which TD stands for Toronto Dominion Bank, believe it or not. Now they merge with Ameritrade. But TD Waterhouse was sending out the margin call email in the evening, and then at the opening of the market the next day, they sold the securities. They never gave you a chance to do anything otherwise. And they got a lot of bad press for that. But hey, they were scared to death, because companies like eBay and Cisco and Microsoft and Intel, and these are bona fide companies, were falling like a stone. Others were just disappearing left and right. DrCoop.com and CGMI, which I think is still around. TheGlobe.com, eToys, Pets.com. You remember these companies? No? Webvan, Home Grocer. You don't remember them? See, you guys, 10 years ago. Wasn't that long? Well, I guess that's coming up a long time. And so those things just disappeared. So if you had a margin to, you know, wow. You understand how much you could lose? Yeah, okay. Great. Of course. Let's talk about things when they go well. If your investments do very well, then you can use the excess margin that you create in your margin account to purchase additional stock without having to come up with more money. It's called excess margin. In other words, you have more equity than you need. And then when you have more equity than you need, you can do, and I hate this word, and I hope you will too, pyramiding. Well, no, this is based on real assets. But it sure does bring up the idea of Ponzi schemes and pyramid schemes. You're using your excess margin to buy more margin stocks. And what do you think of this strategy?
Sounds old.
it's a risky strategy, folks, and people do it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to tell you not to do this. Maybe ask my advice, I'll tell you, don't do it. But you're not asking my advice. You're coming here to learn about this, and you need to understand it. But I think it's dangerous. I wouldn't do it, and I hope you won't do it. But that's your business. You know, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. And get this, folks. This money is not free. Right? When you borrow money, what does the bank want?
Interest.
When you borrow money from a brokerage firm, what does the brokerage want? They want interest. So paying interest on the margin loan also adds yet another drag on your investment returns. Your margin investments must meet or exceed the margin interest rate in order for you to just break even. Commissions and interest. Now you know why your broker is always so happy to take your calls? You're not stupid. They see the banks making rich off of borrowing and lending money. So, hey, let's do it, bro. All right. So, why would I buy on margin? And the easy answer is, you shouldn't. The risks are not worth the potential reward, in my humble opinion, for what it's worth. However, there is a valid, logical reason for having a margin account, which we discussed at the beginning of this. It allows you to temporarily borrow against your investments without having to sell them, in much the same way you could borrow against your home. You do not incur the commission costs, you do not trigger capital gains taxes, but you do pay interest. So anybody think they'd want to pull this off? Anybody think they'd want to do this? No? It's up to you. Okay, so let's take a look at some examples. And you know what? Let's do them real fast. Your stock is selling for $50, right? So let's cross this guy out. Because we've got a couple of problems and we're going to do this, and then we're going to do the problems, and then we'll be done. Okay, so the stock is selling for $50. You put up $30. That's your margin. And you borrow $20. That's your margin loan. Very good. Excellent. Now, the stock price rises, yippee, to $80. Whoopee! Yeah, $30 gain. What happens to your margin? Well, here's how you compute it. The value of the security minus the loan divided by the value of security. So the security has gone up to $80, and the margin loan is still $20. and the value of security is $80. So if you run that through, we're at 75% margin. We have excess margin. We could go out and buy another stock with that excess margin.
Oh, is that pyramiding?
That's pyramiding, right. Okay. Because remember, the minimum is 50%. Mm-hmm. The initial requirement is 50%. As long as we're above 50%, we have excess margin. We can use that to buy more shares. Now, if the stock price instead were to fall to 25, well, yeah, we're not going to be allowed to do that. What's happened? We have $25 minus the $20 we own divided by 25 or 20%. No, we're not going to be allowed. That's not going to be allowed to happen. They're not going to let us do that. Okay? All right, so now, traditionally with margin accounts, the brokerage firms would create an account balance sheet to keep track of the account. But it's all computerized now. Now, when I put the Series 7 in 1998, they still had these questions on the Series 7. So I don't know if they still do because it's all computerized. But those of you with accounting experience will recognize this as assets equals liability plus equity, or assets minus liability equals equity. You accounts out there?
Yeah.
To calculate the margin, we use margin equals account equity divided by total assets. So here's the problem from page 43. All right, you purchase 800 shares at 50. You put up 20,000 and borrow the rest, so 50% margin. $20,000 divided by the 40,000, 50,000. So we have, so this side is the assets. 800 shares at $50 a share, 40,000. We borrowed 20,000 and we came up with $20,000. Now if the stock price goes to 35, the assets are going to fall. You got that? Yeah, put that right there. The assets are going to fall. Is the loan going to change? No. So now our account equity is going down to $8,000, and we take the account value divided by the liabilities and account equity, and you wind up with, that's not right. The account equity divided by the assets, 8,000 divided by 328,000, and we got a margin call. All right, great. So let's now take a look at the assignment sheet. Not the assignment sheet, the worksheet. And let's do this now. You got one? Oh, sorry.
No, I'm sorry if I didn't hear, but at what point do you the people that are winning by the money, at what time do they cut you off and say, we're down?
When you hit the margin, maintenance margin, when you hit the absolute minimum that you're allowed, they can raise that, but it cannot be less than 25%. And once you get down to there, 28.6, but they said in the book, in the example, they said your broker said it for you at 30%. So you're going to get a margin call because your broker said 30%. If your broker said 25%, they'd say, okay, you have to come up with more cash, or what they want you to do and what the industry tells you to do is sell the securities. Sell the stuff now, pay off the loan, and take your lumps. You magnified your losses. Okay, so let's now take a look at problem one. Okay. You have $5,000 to invest. And who's this? What company is this? Dewey Cheatham and Howe.
Do you like that?
That's an old joke, folks. That goes back to the days of the Three Stooges. They're going to make that. They already made a movie,
the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
How could you improve upon perfection? I hope it does well.
Color.
Who needs color? Okay. You have $5,000 to invest, right? Now, the stock price is currently $25. What is the maximum number of shares you could purchase buying on margin if the initial margin requirement is 50%? You have $5,000 and you want to maximize your returns. No. You come up with $5,000, they will let you borrow $5,000. You understand? 50% is the initial margin. And now you can borrow less. You don't have to borrow the whole 50%. But that allows you to double your investment. So your margin loan would be $5,000. And you're going to be paying interest on this, folks. You understand? Yeah, okay, good. All right, so if you can control $10,000, how many shares at $25 can you buy? 400 shares, right? 10,000 divided by $25, or 400, oops, 400 shares. Everybody understand that? Okay, now, construct an account balance sheet for the above transaction. Well, on the left-hand side are our assets. How many shares? 400 shares at how much? $28 per share. I'm sorry, did I say 28? I'm sorry. $25 per share equals $10,000. All right, now, over here is our liabilities and account equity. So, what are the liabilities? The margin loan is $5,000. And our account equity is equal to $5,000. So to calculate it's a total. Let's put the totals down here. Total, $10,000. To calculate our initial margin, we take the account equity divided by the total assets, and so 5,000 divided by 10,000 is 50%. Are you with me? Now, if the price falls to 17, what happens? You're screwed. If the price falls to 17, now how much are my assets worth? 400 times 17, 6,800. Does my margin loan change?
No.
My account equity now changes to
$1,800.
Understand? Because now the value of the assets have fallen to $6,800. The margin loan doesn't change. So now your account equity becomes $1,800. Are you with me? See that? Okay, so in 1C, I ask you to use the original calculation where you take the value of the security, which is $6,800, minus the margin loan, $5,000, divided by the value of the security. The other way to do it, using the balance sheet, is to just take the account equity divided by the total assets. But both of them are exactly the same. What is the new margin? Did we get a margin call yet?
No.
No, but we're pretty darn close, aren't we? We're pretty darn close to having the brokerage firm call us or send us an email saying, come up with more cash or sell, do we cheat them in hell? Yes?
How often are these calculated?
Oh, every day.
Every day. At the end of the day.
I think it happens at the end of the day. I don't really know. I've never had any clients. I've never done it, so I don't really know. But I'm assuming it happens once a day. Maybe now it happens several times a day because computers don't care. Right, you just set it up to do it every hour or so, and the computer goes through and I don't know. That's a good question. I should know. My understanding is that it used to happen once a day. Well, that's because these things would be calculated once a day because people had to do them manually. But I really don't know. I should write that down. Let me write that down. How often? And I bet you it's different between every brokerage firm is different, probably. Okay, so questions on this? What do you think, folks? Easy? It's really not that difficult. It's not that difficult, and people don't really understand it. And this is the kind of investing that can make you very, very wealthy if you do well, because it's like a lever. But it's also the kind that can get you in trouble. If you're a hedge fund and you have strong political connections, you can borrow far more than 50%. You can borrow 90 or 95 or 97%. Yeah. Now think about it, folks. If your investment goes up 1%, you put up, you know, in other words, you bought something for $100 and you put up $3 and borrowed $97. If your investment goes up 1%, you understand how much you've made? 33% goes up $1. If it goes down a dollar, you've lost that much. Now, who in their right mind would allow a company to do that? Your elected representatives. Your duly authorized regulatory authorities allowed this to happen in the 1990s with a company called Long-Term Capital Management, and they almost brought down the market in 1998. 10 years later, it wasn't just one company doing it. It was dozens and dozens of companies pulling these kind of shenanigans off. And you've already heard of Bear Stearns, right? They went down the porcelain oasis, and then Lehman Brothers went down the porcelain oasis, and then the government said, you know what, we better not allow them any more to go down, or else we're going to be in Great Depression Phase 2. So do study this. Please understand this, because you're going to be the guru out there. When we come back, we'll continue with what is called shorting, which is even more dangerous. And then we'll do some more calculations. Yes? The calculations, I say that, are not going to be on the exam. But if you take the Series 7, you're going to have to do them. Now, please, 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 I need some Baffle the Brokers. I need something to do this weekend. Give me something to do this weekend. I'll give you more opportunities to fill these more of these out. But put them over there. Please don't put your name on them unless you really want to. I'll get you. Okay, who snuck in late?
No.
Thank you. I thought, what do you think? Is it pretty interesting stuff?
Yes.
This is interesting stuff.
Pull my hand.
Uh-oh.
I need a tour later
to do. Oh, no. Anthony is here. Daniel is here. Ricardo is here. Eduardo is here. Bruno, no. Joseph Jules is here. Jimmy, no.
Okay. Put it over there.
Unless you want me to know who it is. Put them over here, folks. Come on. I need some work this weekend.